Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. Thanksgiving break has come and gone, and maybe you're a parent whose college student came home for the holiday and dropped the bombshell. I don't want to go back to college. Wait, what? Was the social scene too much? Grades not good? Well, 30% of college freshmen don't make it to their sophomore year. And Thanksgiving break is often the first time parents learn there's trouble. This hour on Point, when your college kid wants to come home for good. Join us. Are you a parent who's just learned your college student is miserable at school? Are you a college student thinking about dropping out? Tell us your story or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. With me from Washington this hour is William Stixrud. He's a clinical neuropsychologist and professor of psychiatry and pediatrics at the George Washington University School of Medicine. He's also the co-author of The Self-Driven Child, The Science and Sense of Giving Your Kids More Control Over Their Lives. You can find a link to his recent story also in the New York Times, When a College Student Comes Home to Stay. That's at our website, onpointradio.org. William Stixrud, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Thanks so much.
So 30% of college freshmen don't return to college as sophomores. That really gets your attention, that number. What's behind that statistic to your mind?
I think it's very complicated. And I think that many of the kids that I see who have anxiety disorders or learning disabilities or ADHD, they don't have the academic competencies really to manage college independently. I think there's also a huge mental health crisis on college campuses. So vulnerable kids go to college. And because college environments are so dysregulated in terms of sleeping and drinking and pot smoking, that for many vulnerable kids, they just can't manage the lack of structure, the lack of predictability. And certainly the party culture of college, some kids can't handle that. And the disrupted sleep that so many kids experience in college is another huge factor.
So it's a highly dysregulated environment. But as you said, the mental health picture for young people has changed dramatically in the last 25 years. Tell me more about that. What are you seeing?
Well, certainly, there's research suggests that people in the early 2000s, older high school students and college students were 5 to 8 times more likely to report symptoms of anxiety disorder or major depression than people were at the height of the Great Depression, during World War II, during the Cold War. And even in the last 5 to 7 years, there's evidence that there's been a dramatic increase in anxiety and depression in high school kids and in college kids.
And so you write in your piece in the New York Times with regard to these college freshmen who are not returning as sophomores. You say many parents and presumably college students think of getting into college as the finish line of a race. In many ways, that's really not the case. Tell me about that.
Well, many kids, certainly in certain parts of this country, including the D.C. area where I live, many kids think and many parents think that the most important outcome of adolescence is getting into the most elite college possible. And I think that from my angle and the angle of my co-author, Ned Johnson, of our book, we think the most important outcome is developing a healthy brain. And many of the things that kids have to do to get into elite colleges are not good for the brain.
Such as
sleeping 6 hours a night as a senior. Most high school seniors now average somewhere between 6 and 6.5 hours of sleep, where they need 9.25 not to feel tired. Such as just a workaholic kind of schedule, very, very high levels of stress and sleep deprivation. And really a formula for developing anxiety disorders or depression is be too tired and too stressed for too long.
So the pressure we're putting on these kids, it's hard to take, right?
Well, it is for many. And if they have the idea, many kids have the idea that the only successful people in this world are top students and people who never fail at anything. And I think that I spend a lot of my energy trying to disabuse kids of this notion that it makes so much difference where you go to college, that it's worth sacrificing into a healthy brain to get into an elite college. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it's worrisome. And many kids, it used to be that kids would fight back. You know, the kids would say, get off my back kind of thing. And now so many kids, they just internalize all this stress and pressure and this delusional idea that somehow the only way you become successful is driving yourself continually and it just doesn't work.
And so a lot of these kids, 30% of college freshmen not returning to college as sophomores, regardless of the reason for returning home, it can be quite devastating, right, for students who feel that they've somehow failed, for their parents who have a variety of emotions attached to this child of theirs who's dropped out of college early. I guess you've seen both ends of the spectrum there.
It's devastating. And I see a lot of kids who I consult with a lot of kids who didn't make it. And they come back home and they meet with me. And I'm struck by many of them. There was just no chance. I mean, if you could predict that they would be home by November 1st or by Thanksgiving. They just didn't have the chops to do it. Or they just weren't that. I mean, I see a lot of kids, are you really looking forward to going to college? And they all say, yeah, I can hardly wait. And I say, are you really looking forward to spending hours in the library? And they say, are you kidding me? You know, and they come home, and many kids feel that they feel stupid, they feel embarrassed, they feel like they're getting behind their friends, they feel terrible about wasting their parents' money or about the academic debt that they're incurring if they're taking out loans. So it's very painful for everybody.
And can be a real game changer, can change the trajectory, right, of some kids very early on in their lives.
It does. And one of the first things that I tell kids is that the first time I went to graduate school, I went for 20 straight weeks at the University of California, Berkeley, and I didn't turn in a single assignment. And I flunked out. And it was the best possible thing that could have happened to me. And telling them that, to tell them that somebody who's had a really charmed life basically flunked out of school, encourage them. I try to normalize it. It's so common these days that this to happen. Mm-hmm. But kids feel terrible about it. And it does, for some kids, it really takes them off track. Although it doesn't have to. There's many kids who use this experience as a way to grow, and they understand that they weren't ready. They figure out what they need to do to get ready, and they do that.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation now. Joining me from Owensboro, Kentucky, is Rainsford Stauffer. Rainsford dropped out of college after her freshman year, moved home to Kentucky. Rainsford, welcome to On Point. How nice to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you were an overachiever in high school. You had great grades, and there was little doubt in your mind that you'd excel in college. But then freshman year came. Tell me what happened.
I think it was a culmination of a lot of different things that led me to ultimately exit school at the end of my freshman year. As you mentioned, I had spent my entire high school experience holding this ideal of college in my mind, which is something I still hear from a lot of students today, that we glamorize it, we hold it up as this beacon or this rite of passage on your way to a successful young adulthood. And that's very much what I had in mind. I was excited to be challenged academically. I was eager to meet new people and sort of broaden my horizons, not just academically and socially, but in regard to what I wanted out of life and sort of discovering that path. And ultimately, what happened was my experience on campus was so vastly different than the one I had spent 4 years of high school imagining that I became very quickly disenchanted. I didn't feel like I fit in on campus. I didn't feel like I could accurately gauge what I was getting out of my courses and how that was applicable to my real life outside of school. And it led to a sort of disillusionment where I could no longer see how the pieces of the collegiate puzzle were working together.
In fact, you wrote in the New York Times, quote, I went from being a confident literature nerd hoping to earn a PhD to a voiceless, slumped student who cowered behind her desk. I dropped classes, opted out of study abroad. I stopped eating, lost handfuls of hair. I mean, you were in a bad place, Rainsford.
It was. It was hard, especially because I think even just a couple years ago when all of this happened and on a very small collegiate campus, there was no precedent for anyone understanding how to handle this. There was no precedent for me understanding how to articulate what I was feeling because, you know, from the outside looking in, you're seeing your peers seemingly having the time of their lives, and you internalize that and think that there's something fundamentally wrong with you, that you're failing by default because you're not having your perception of other people's experiences. And so when I would go to academic advisors or professors and say, I think something's wrong here, I'm not sure what I need to do differently, no one understood what to do because my grades were always very good. And that was the only thing they knew to point to.
So you went home. You dropped out. What was the reaction at home among your family and friends?
It was interesting because I actually finished out the year. I dropped out in May, and it was one of the only times in my life up until that point that I had not run a very formative decision by my parents first. I knew that I was so unhappy that this was something I needed to figure out for myself. And I'm lucky that I have a very understanding family. And I think it helped that I was also working throughout my freshman year. I had a job, so there was some structure to what I was doing. Mm-hmm. But especially with friends and with former professors and with former high school teachers, people were astounded. And I didn't realize until that point how much stigma there was, not just around dropping out of college, but around doing college differently than we perceive it to be.
I was going to ask you about that stigma. It's thick, right, in many of these circumstances, especially in yours.
It was very heavy. And I think what struck me as I spent 2 years working outside of school after I dropped out before eventually returning was that it's not just a stigma around being a college dropout or being someone who failed out. What I felt was more that I had broken rank somehow, that I had put a fracture in the perfect plan of young adulthood and didn't sort of follow this plan A. And people were really baffled by that.
I'm curious what the reaction was to this quite moving article that you wrote in the New York Times.
Honestly, that's been one of the most humbling experiences of my life. I got so many messages on Snapchat and email and Twitter from students or from parents or from professors, all saying versions of the same thing, whether this was something that they had felt not known what to do about. And it showed that this is actually not an uncommon sensation for young adults navigating this transition.
Sure isn't. We're discussing what to do when a college student comes home early announcing they're dropping out. You can join the conversation. 30% of college freshmen don't make it to sophomore year. What's going on here? I'm Jane Clayson. Much more with our guests and your calls after this break. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and we're talking about college students who drop out and might have dropped the bombshell over Thanksgiving to their families. You can join the conversation. Is this your story? Are colleges doing enough to help these kids and their parents before it's too late? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We've been speaking with Bill Stixrud. He's a clinical neuropsychologist and author of the recent New York Times article, When a College Student Comes Home to Stay. And with us now, Rainsford Stauffer, who dropped out of college. She eventually went back. But Rainsford, pick up the story. You left college after your freshman year. And you wrote that basically after you left college, life opened up. What did you mean by that?
I think that I had failed in a way that at the time felt so traumatic and so off the beaten path of what I expected my life to be, that in a way that freedom, that failure freed me. It allowed me to see options that weren't there when I was sitting in the confines of a classroom feeling very out of place and very depressed. It allowed me to be curious again. And through all of these things and this freedom that came from failing, it helped me rediscover why I wanted to go back to college in the first place and what the ambition behind completing the degree really was.
Failing freshman year was the best thing for my education, is what you wrote. I guess the bottom line is college experience doesn't need to be a one-size-fits-all. Is that what your experience taught you?
Absolutely. I think that as we move forward in these conversations about what it means to be a college student or a young person today, something that's fundamental is realizing more and more our systems, including our education systems, should adjust to fit students, their goals, their experiences, their personal feelings, instead of students feeling like they have to conform to fit a very narrow four-year system.
And so when did you decide you were ready to go back?
About a year and a half into taking time away from school, I started really thinking about what I wanted my goals to be. I had worked in a couple different positions in different industries. I had some work experience, and I knew that ultimately all roads led back to me wanting to be a writer and eventually a professor. And because of that, I knew that a college degree was going to be a worthy prerequisite. And I think what those experiences allowed me to have were some reasoning behind why I was working so hard in school, why I was showing up to class to begin with. It gave me a sense of purpose that I don't think I had before. Mm.
Some reasoning behind the hard work. So it's so great. You're a graduate student now at NYU. What advice do you have for parents, for college students who are living through this right now?
I think ultimately you have to know that you can recover from failure and that that's not going to be a dark mark against you later on down the road. I think that so often, because we want things to go well so badly, young people, teachers, parents, we want students to have successful experiences. And so we hype them up a little bit. We make it seem like this is the most important decision of your life and that it can change everything. And what I would encourage students considering dropping out or parents maybe dealing with this at home to do is to look at all college decisions as one in a series of formative steps towards successful and fulfilled young adulthood instead of the end-all be-all.
Rainsford Stauffer, all the best to you. You've taught us a lot today, and we appreciate you being with us. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. William Stixford, what did you hear in Rainsford's story there?
A very common story in bright people who think who in high school think that their major job is getting into a good college. And when they get there, often it's disillusioning for many of the reasons that she talked about. And I focus a lot on what we can do to prevent this kind of thing, as well as what we do once it happens. But I wrote the article because by October 1st, I knew six kids who'd been, maybe October 15th, who'd already been come home. Mm-hmm. As a freshman, mm-hmm. and two had already come home as sophomores, mm-hmm. and so I think it's very common. And I think that if kids as they're growing up, the idea that what we're trying to do is to develop themselves so that they have something useful to offer this world, as opposed to setting this major goal of getting to the most elite college possible, I think things get much better. Mm-hmm. I think that what we stress in our book is how important it is for young people to have a sense of control over their own life. I think what Rainsworth was saying was that she experienced, got to college, and this wasn't what I expected, and felt so overwhelmed and such a low sense of control that she needed time off. She needed to figure out, why am I doing this?
Develop herself.
Yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. And so many kids go to college with no idea of why they're doing it.
Let's get some calls in here. They're rolling off the board. Chelsea in Annapolis, Maryland, you're first. Hi, Chelsea. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. I called in because the things that you're saying really hit home for me. I graduated from high school 10 years ago. And tried college for about a year, and right now I'm just getting back into college again. And I really didn't understand where I was going to go in life when I first tried college. And so I felt like I was just throwing money at a school because that's where I was supposed to be. Whereas now I love the program that I'm in. I know how it affects my life, and I feel like I'm actually growing as opposed to just sitting in a classroom so that I can pay somebody to sit in a classroom.
Chelsea, thank you. Thanks for sharing that. I really appreciate it. Here's Joey in Waynesboro, Virginia. Hi, Joey. What's your story?
Hi. I just feel like the entire time that I went through middle school and high school, all that I ever heard was, unless you go to college, you're not going to have a happy and successful adulthood. And that's all that I've ever heard. And then I've come to, in my own experience, and from my mother who works with special needs people, that college college is not necessarily the best fit for everybody. Mm-hmm. There are tons of trade jobs that need to be filled that we're running out of people to do. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, it seems like we in general have this down look on people who do those jobs that if they weren't there to do them, we wouldn't have homes, we wouldn't have stores, we wouldn't have running water and electricity.
Yep. You got it, Joey. Thank you so much for that important comment. Let me bring in another voice into this conversation, a view from campus. Joining me from Gainesville, Florida, is Dr. Marcia Morris, a psychiatrist at the University of Florida. She writes the Psychology Today blog called College Wellness, Promoting Happiness and Health in the College Years. She's also the author of a recent book, The Campus Cure, A Parent's Guide to Mental Health and Wellness for College Students. Dr. Morris, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
So 30% of these college freshmen not returning to college as sophomores. What are you seeing on the ground in these college dropout rates? Why are these numbers so high?
Well, we do know, as Dr. Stixrud mentioned, that mental health problems have gone up dramatically in this population. Depression rates have gone up by 50% in the last 6 years, and anxiety disorders have doubled. And the mental health problems do play a role in people needing to leave college. As a result, we've increased mental health services on most campuses, but sometimes it isn't even enough to meet the needs for students.
Right. So talk about that. What are colleges and universities doing to handle this mental health crisis, these needs of their students?
Many schools have innovative programs like peer support groups run by students to offer students support and feel more connected. In general, campuses have increased therapy services. We've greatly increased our psychiatry services on campus from one psychiatrist when I started in 1993 to six full-time equivalent psychiatric providers today.
And yet in many places, on many campuses, just getting an appointment with a campus therapist or a psychiatrist can take weeks.
Access is a huge problem, not only on campuses, but everywhere in terms of mental health. My most recent blog in Psychology Today addresses how parents can help their students access care. Students may not be able to get care on campus, but usually there is a campus case manager, someone with a social work background who can link a student to services off campus.
Is this something new, though, Dr. Morris? I mean, have college students always struggled, or are we just feeling like we can talk about it more? We can take action more? What's the difference between now and what we've seen in the past?
There is definitely an increase in mental health problems in both high school and college students. There's also somewhat less stigma about getting help, but that doesn't explain this increase. And just getting back to what Dr. Stixrud talked about, this pressure. Students feel this excessive pressure to get into the best college. And then I see the college students feeling excessive pressure to get into the best graduate school, get the best job. And there's actually a study that showed perfectionism has gone up dramatically in college students. It's called externally driven. Students who feel they have to have the best job, make the most money, even look the best. That's gone up by 33% in the last 20 years.
Let me get David in here from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, David. Glad you waited, and welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. My daughter struggled with depression and anxiety all through high school, and my wife and I knew when she went away to college that it was going to be a huge challenge for us. And she chose to go to Colorado, which is very, very far. You know, we actually just sent her back last night on a red eye because her flights got canceled. But we really did a lot of preemptive work to get her where she is right now, which is basically almost moment to moment. We've got counseling on campus that she goes to. We found a counselor before she went to college that was outside the university system that she goes to. We tried to prepare her up front. Some of the things we never did was we never put any of that pressure on her as far as getting into the best school and, you know, having to go to college. In fact, we really wanted her to take a year off, but she was insistent on going away when she got a scholarship. And, you know, for us, it's almost moment to moment. We don't know if she'll make it through this semester. Well, actually, now we're pretty confident she'll make it through this semester. And now we're really looking to see if she can make it through the year and then to the future. But it's really for us, we just set these short-term goals for her to meet and hopefully get her where she needs to be.
And you're very open with her, David. You talk about these things, and if you have a problem, give us a call. We'll help you.
I talk to her all hours of the night. I talk to her. She'll call me at 3 in the morning. She'll call me at, 8 in the morning when times are great, and she wants to let me know she's having a great day, like she just did before I went on this call to, Dad, I don't know if I'm going to make it, and all I can do is coach her and help her and try to give her, advice on how to make it through the moment. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, just make it through today, and we'll see what happens
one
tomorrow.
Day at a time.
And thankfully...
David, thank you. Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Such an important story, and good luck to your daughter there in Colorado. Dr. Morris, there's David, really engaged with his daughter, carefully monitoring her. They've had some preemptive issues that they've tried to solve with her before going off to college. What if parents are the issue? What if, kids don't want to tell their parents they need help?
For the most part, most parents are very caring, but you're right. Some students do not want to tell parents. They think their parents are under pressure themselves. Their parents might have their own mental health issue. It is critical, though, for parents before the student goes to college, just like David did, to say, you can call me anytime. I'm available, and to handle it. I've had situations where parents weren't always calm, and I would do a session with the student in the room, calling the parent on speakerphone and problem solving how they can work together and how this parent can be supportive. So even parents where the relationship isn't all the greatest, these things can be worked on through therapy. But if a student doesn't have a supportive parent, it's critical they find a supportive adult in their life at home, and also have a sense of belonging on campus and find people to speak to on campus
when they need it. Dr. Stixrud, jump back in here. What role do you see parents playing? How much should they help their students? And what about, this notion that parents are often hampered by the fact that so much is confidential? These students are technically adults. There are HIPAA laws. I mean, parents are often in the dark before it's too late.
Right, right. And I think that ideally we start when kids are in high school with the goal of them being able to run their own life independently, at least for 6 months during their senior year. Because they're going into such a dysregulated learning environment, there's so many challenges regarding to drugs and alcohol, to sleep, to loneliness, to not connecting socially, that it makes sense to me, and it has for many years, that parents have the right to say that I want to see that you can manage your own life. You can schedule your appointments. You can take your own medication. You can manage your workload. You can manage your transportation. Because this is what kids need to do in college. So I think that there's a lot that we do up front. And once they're there, I feel that what we want to do as parents is we want to offer help. We want to be available. And I think that what I recommend to parents is to ask, is there a way that I could help? As opposed to, if kids are struggling, as opposed to just jumping in and says, you should do this and do this and do this. It's much better if parents simply say, is there a way that I could help? Is there a way that I could be helpful here?
Isn't there a balance, Dr. Morris, between, supporting a student's autonomy and being engaged, especially when these mental health issues are involved?
There is a balance, and each child is different. I have two recent college graduates, so I had to take different approaches. So you have to assess your child. Just like David said, he knew his daughter needed more support. Getting back to the legal issues of seeing grades, I encourage every parent to request their child sign what's called a FERPA waiver form.
FERPA. Uh-huh.
Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. It's a law that prevents actually parents from seeing their college students' grades because their students are adults at age 18. If a student signs a FERPA waiver form, parents can access the grades. And I know Dr. Stixrud mentioned this in his article, and I do think when a student is starting out, they need parents to see the end of the semester grades. I'm not saying watch the grades all semester, but I have found that some students are not fully revealing of their struggles to parents because they want to do things on their own, but sometimes they're doing poorly in school. And parents can sit with their students, not criticize, but diagnose the problem. Is it a learning disability? Is it a mental health issue? Is the student not mature enough and maybe needs to take time off? But parental advice is critical early if a student's struggling. It's important to know if students are struggling. I also want to mention something about the HIPAA release of information form. This is a form that students can sign, and it allows mental health providers to speak to family. For more severe mental health problems, I think it's critical for students to sign this form. So if a student is struggling with depression or even severe suicidal thoughts, the parents and student and therapist can work collaboratively to promote safety.
That's good advice. Some good concrete things we can do there. We're discussing the struggle that many college students face as they transition to university life, to college life. What parents can do when they want to come home for good. You can join the conversation. What's the solution here? Is a gap year before college the answer? Maybe college just isn't the right fit. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
Smart journalism, fascinating topics. Words that describe CNN's podcast, The Assignment with Audie Cornish.
Last year, the Army missed its recruitment goal. It had 65,000 spots to fill and came up 10,000 short of that target. Why is it so hard to recruit? How's the Pentagon responding? And how are the voices of service members on social media shifting the balance?
Listen to The Assignment with Audie Cornish wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. Here are some shocking statistics. At least a quarter of all college students have been diagnosed with a mental health disorder. 30% of college freshmen don't make it to their sophomore year, and only 20% graduate in 4 years. What's going on here, and what should you do if your college kid comes home for the holidays and tells you they want to drop out? You can join the conversation. Are you on the other side of this? What's your advice? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Great panel today. Bill Stixrud, clinical neuropsychologist, and Marcia Morris, psychiatrist at the University of Florida. Got to get some callers in here. Nikolai is first in Colchester, Vermont. Hi, Nikolai. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
So I'm a recent graduate of 2017. And I started a landscaping business in high school that my parents happily funded. And it really gave me an outlet to kind of drive that self-perseverance and self, you know, regulation, which a lot of kids don't have. And in high school, even my counselors were selling it to me that it was the worst idea to do that. And here I am out in the trades, and there's like zero labor. Everyone's either on heroin or in college doing nothing. Well, not nothing, but not enjoying themselves.
Worked for you. Nikolai, thank you very much for the call. Katie in Newcastle, Maine is on the line. Hi, Katie.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
Hi, I'm the parent of a senior in high school, and I almost feel like this conversation is a gift because it shows me that, you know, what he's going through right now is clearly what the whole country is going through with kids. I mean, my children went to college in 2008, and the process between that then and now is vastly different with the pressures, and it's overwhelming. And I think really the gift is the conversation of a gap year, so these kids can get off the treadmill and breathe, because I think that's what's happening, is that the pressure to be perfect, there is no perfect.
Katie, thank you. And you bring up an important point, a gap year. William Sixrude, you're a big advocate for the gap year. Tell us why.
Well, I saw a kid a couple of years, probably 6 or 7 years ago in June, who had just graduated from high school, kicking and screaming. He only graduated because his parents and teachers were on top of him all the time. And they asked me, the parents said, how can we get him ready for college in September? And I said, you can't. And they wanted to throw me out the window, and they said, I need a second opinion. I said, that's okay. But I told the kid, it's just a matter of timing. You're smart enough to get a PhD if you want, but this is a matter of timing. And the parents were angry. They left my office. And about 2 weeks later, I got an email and said, thank you so much. I don't know what we were thinking. This kid clearly is not ready for college. And so planned out a gap year. And this is not a wealthy family. They planned out a gap year that involved him working on a ranch part of the year and doing something that just felt meaningful. He's providing some service. And he's finished college. Now he came back after a year and started college. And I just see this a lot. I see this so much where kids, many of the kids who burn themselves out in high school, they simply need a year to recover from the stress and kind of heal their brain. And so many kids who are immature, they need another year of prefrontal cortex maturation before they start college. Mm.
Stephen writes on our Facebook page, I dropped out of college my third semester. I wasn't emotionally ready, had no idea what my intellectual goals were. I moved from Washington, D.C. to California and then traveled through Europe. I wore many hats, saw many things. I followed my gut, made the choice to return to school when I was 29 to complete my degree. And at 34, I achieved a graduate degree and have been quite successful in my career. I think we need a new system that promotes a gap year after high school when young people invest in themselves in apprenticeships, service programs in the United States or abroad. Dr. Morris, how do you weigh in on that? A gap year, a service year, a church service year, a secular service, something after high school?
I think it's an outstanding idea for many students who do feel they don't know what they want to do, and they may even feel burnt out. Many countries actually have students do service for a year or two. So I think it can be an excellent idea. One thing that came up in a lot of the earlier discussions is having purpose and doing something that's meaningful. And for some students, that may not be college. It may be doing a lawn service. It may be being in Germany, they have apprenticeships and more manual, skilled manual labor. There are so many things that can be done in life that is enjoyable, that even can pay well. So I think we have to get out of the mindset that college is the only choice for everybody.
Get Jennifer in here from Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. I do like the idea of a gap year, and I would like to say that 35 years ago, I was a freshman at a major university in Atlanta, nationally, internationally ranked university with a full scholarship. And so I did have a lot of pressure. In fact, I even started school the summer after high school. I didn't even take the summer, and it was a huge mistake. I was very depressed. By the end of the year, I would say that I was somewhat suicidal. I finally withdrew. I took the summer, the next summer, and thought about it, and I went to a small private college, and it made all the difference. I wasn't a number. There were people who were invested in how I turned out. There were people that cared.
And your son's going through the same thing now.
Well, yes. Fortunately, he is graduating this semester, as well as my niece. My other niece also graduated several years ago, but they did go through the same things. And in fact, my son tried to get mental health services on campus, and it was months to get in. Thankfully, he's fine. He knows what he wants now, but 2-3 years ago, it was a crisis.
It is for many, many families. Jennifer, thank you so much, and good luck to your son. Kenneth is in Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Kenneth. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm a director of financial aid, and one of the things that people must consider when they're making a decision about taking a gap year or whether to start school right away is financial. One aspect of taking a gap year is to make sure that the scholarships that they've applied for, that they can apply for, will allow them for a gap year. So a lot of times students get offered freshman scholarships that are coming in their first year of college, and if they give those up, they may not be able to get them back later in the future. It becomes harder to get them when you've taken a gap year. And that's something that the colleges really need to consider also, is to make sure that they have an allowance for gap years when they are looking into their scholarships for incoming freshmen, for students who have chosen to take a gap year. When you're talking about things like class rank, you know, those are weighted differently if a student's been out for a whole year.
Good information. Good thing to know. Kenneth, thanks for that. Here's from our Twitter account. Joan says, I was pushing myself so hard junior and senior year of high school to get into the best college. I developed an eating disorder. No one knew. By the time my folks dropped me off at college, I was hitting rock bottom. I cried so hard the day they dropped me off. I had wanted so badly to get out, to break away from home, have college solve all my problems, but it didn't. I came home on Thanksgiving. Let's go to Bill in Tampa, Florida with another story. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
Back in, I'd say, 2008, I graduated high school, and instead of taking even just the summer to get adjusted, I immediately enrolled into early enrollment at the University of South Florida. And I got to tell you, it was probably the biggest mistake of my entire life. For my entire life, I had been getting pushed by my parents to excel, exceed, be the best, because the best are the winners and everyone else is losers. And when I got there to college, I crossed that finish line. I was in a prestigious program, and then it just all fell out underneath me. I was like a coil undone. I had no energy left to go to class, no drive. It was just as if my very soul had just been sucked out of my body, and I ended up late dropping all of my classes semester after semester until I left, and I went on just journey of self-discovery. I started two businesses, and they were both fairly successful. And recently, I sold them off, and now I'm back in school using the money that I made from those businesses to really drive my purpose forward and finally get that degree. But without that time of self-discovery, I got to tell you, I was lost. I didn't have my parents sitting over my shoulder beating me into, like, a state of submission to get the classwork done, to pace everything. Yeah. And without that, it was just, there was nothing there.
And it worked out for you. Bill, thank you so much for the call there from Tampa. Dr. Morris, I'm curious, one piece of this, is there a divide among lower socioeconomic demographics when it comes to dropping out of college? Is there, what about first generation students? How does that piece of this puzzle play out?
I have read the statistics that show first-generation students are more likely to drop out from college. And actually, tomorrow night, I'll be speaking to a group of high school students who will be first-generation college students about how to succeed in college, because they're more vulnerable. Most schools do have mentorship programs for first-generation students, either with other students or with faculty. And it's critical for first-generation students to connect with these programs and get that additional support. And I've worked with many first-generation students who face some struggles, but were able to work them through and be very successful. But they sometimes they will need extra help because they may not have a parent. They don't have a parent who's had that experience of going to college.
And Dr. Stixrud, for all students, you suggest in your book, in this article, that students should be given more control of their lives earlier. Expecting kids to go from parental to control to near total freedom is not realistic in this day and age.
Right. So it turns out that a low sense of control is the most stressful thing in the universe. It also turns out that the way you become self-motivated, a really healthy motivation to pursue your own life and develop yourself, do something meaningful, the key is autonomy. So we want to be supporting young people in the development, in making your own decisions. We believe that in high school, we want kids making most of the important decisions, basically all the important decisions for their own life. Kids are capable of making good decisions if we entrust them. And that experience of trusting kids to make good decisions just helps them to get ready to go to college. And if they aren't ready, to know that they aren't ready.
Let's get Anna in here from Warwick, Rhode Island. Hi, Anna. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thank you.
Beth, go ahead.
So I went to university in the fall of 2009, right out of high school. And I kind of just coasted through high school, and I had no real work ethic, but I was one of those, you know, gifted children who was so smart, and I didn't really develop any real hardworking skills, and I wasn't very mature enough to go to university. And when I went, I ended up being way out of my depth and developing some substance abuse issues. And my first semester I did okay, but due to my substance abuse issues, I actually was sexually assaulted. And the second semester, I failed all of my classes. And I really wish that my parents had been able to see my grades. And I feel like they would have been able to reach out to someone to help me when I had no real support system, I felt. Mm-hmm.
Anna, thank you. Dr. Morris, another example of how parents can be more involved, should be more involved, but often aren't or can't be.
Right. And one of the things I write in my book is how parents can detect if their student is suffering from depression or PTSD after a sexual assault. It is hard to know, but sometimes if students are, you know, seem less joyful, they're not spending time with friends, their grades go down, as Anna mentioned, that those are signs. And again, having that open dialogue before they go to school is critical, and saying, you can come to me anytime, you can call me anytime, is critical.
So what should parents do if their child comes home, announces they want to drop out? What should they do? What should they not do? Dr. Stixrud, you first.
So many of the kids that I see who come home and are done by the first semester, they want to prove to themselves and their parents that they can do it. And so they insist that they want to go back a second semester. Mm-hmm. And I've seen virtually nobody be able to kind of get it together to emotionally or academically or just kind of emotional maturity-wise to do that quickly. So I think that if kids come home and that they're basically done or they're overwhelmed, we treat this as a gap year. We treat this as a let's think of something else to do, because clearly college isn't you aren't ready for college. Mm-hmm. And I think we should tell kids that only like something like 30 or 32% of the population has a college degree, going back to a couple earlier callers said. And I think also we should tell kids that it doesn't seem to matter very much where you go to college in terms mm-hmm. of how successful you are, how much money you are,
exactly.
you make, how happy you are.
How happy you are, yeah.
Yeah, and also that so many – we should tell kids more about the many successful people in this world who flunked stuff, who didn't go to college, who had a late trajectory like many of the callers, that they have this idea, young people have this idea that the path to success is this straight upward climb. And it's just not true for most people.
Dr. Morris, what would you add to that?
I have a slightly different twist on this because I am working with students who may be ambivalent about college, and I often will bring the parents into the discussion. I think that it's important if someone comes home for Thanksgiving or a Christmas holiday and says, I want to leave school, is to for the parents to sit calmly with the student and find out what the problem is, because there are some problems that are very solvable. It might be sadness over a breakup, which usually people get over. There might be a more significant mental health problem where time off is indicated. It might be an academic problem where maybe they need to switch majors. So I would encourage parents to sit with their child and even if the child returns to school, to meet with the student, the advisor, and a mental health professional. You can arrange the meeting together if your child signs the forms and agrees to it, and do like a diagnostic evaluation and see does it make sense to stay in school or does it make sense to take time off.
And we got to get rid of the stigma that can deter many young people from speaking up and reaching out for help, especially for mental health issues. So important to talk about all this, and a great conversation, a terrific panel. Dr. Marcia Morris, psychiatrist, University of Florida, author of The Campus Cure, A Parent's Health Guide to Mental Health and Wellness for College Kids. Marcia, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
And Bill Stixrud, clinical neuropsychologist, professor of psychiatry and pediatrics at George Washington University School of Medicine, author of The Self-Driven Child, The Science and Sense of Giving Your Kids More Control Over Their Lives. Bill, so great to have you. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Listeners, thanks to you. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.